we take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion.
Hello and happy holiday seasons to everyone out there. It's another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Simon.
And we are looking at the 2014 Doctor Who Christmas special, The Last Christmas. And season's greetings to you, Simon.
Merry Christmas to you.
So did Stephen Moffat, should I summarize this episode? They dreamed and there was Santa Claus and base and aliens and stuff in that. If you haven't seen it by now, go watch it, because if you wait a month, then it won't be Christmas, and just so. But so did Moffat deliver a Christmas present for you this year, or was there a lump of coal under your tree?
No, I was very happy. I was I mean, obviously, he's always trying to deliver something that is a Christmas episode and something that is a Doctor Who episode, and I definitely thought this was a Doctor Who episode, and I thought it worked within the context of the show and I mean, it was a difficult point to kind of have a Christmas episode with the way that the last series had ended. And I thought it brought that together very well. And it's probably just about Christmassy enough to kind of qualify as a Christmas episode. So, yep, I'm very happy with what Mr. Moffat's delivered in my stocking.
Yeah, I think you've summed it up perfectly well there. The as long as they're going to continue to have Christmases, I'm going to continue to have some problems with television shows that are, for want of a better word, serious, straight, grounded in some form of reality or even non-reality. And then at Christmas time, suddenly Christmas miracles happen and Santa Claus is real. And so, I mean, that's always been very problematic for me, because as the sort of completist I am, it's like, what kind of universe do these people live in? And that always throws it out. So I thought this was a very, very clever way of getting around that, of putting Christmas in, putting Santa Claus in, and at the end of it, we know that was all nonsense with the obligatory tangerine at the end of the episode. But I enjoyed it. I didn't get the chance to rewatch it like all Christmas specials. I watch it the once, and then somehow I just don't want to watch a Christmas episode again, even the day after.
Reheated with
I don't know. It's just kind of weird.
A bit of cold stuffing on the side.
Yeah, yeah. But I did enjoy it. I did enjoy the episode. It may be the best of the Christmas specials. I'm not 100% sure there.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't go that far.
You like Christmas Invasion, though, right?
I love the Christmas Invasion. Christmas Carol's a fabulous story. I love The Snowmen. There have been great stories at Christmas. I think probably now I feel, I don't know if I did at the time, but I feel like A Christmas Carol is my favourite. And I think part of that is that it does stand alone a little bit outside of the story, and then it is properly Christmassy. And Amy and Rory are acknowledged, but they're parked, and the Doctor goes off and has a Christmas story that doesn't have anything to do with the ongoing story arc. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the other Christmas specials, for one reason or another, for better or for worse, and often by necessity, have kind of carried a bit of weight in terms of the, you know, the ongoing story. And that's tough, I think, because clearly you want the ongoing story to have some drama, particularly if there have been serious things going on in it, as there have recently. And yet you don't necessarily want to have angst and all that kind of death and awfulness when you're sitting around with the whole family and you're full of turkey and brandy. So, in a sense, I think A Christmas Carol fills that niche very nicely, and that makes it a very easy one to rewatch. But I've enjoyed other Christmas specials, just as I thought some of them were turkeys.
I've enjoyed most of them at some level, but don't stand up for repeated viewings. for me, but this one was different. I mean, this really was a different animal to me. And of course, we just had the conversation not long ago about the master being crazy mad. And so once you are crazy mad, your plot doesn't make sense, and therefore you can just... So this episode, it's all a dream. It doesn't have to make sense. It doesn't matter that we can't figure out what actually happened. Were those four people on the base? Did they really exist? Because we lost them out of the dream world two layers deeper than the Doctor and Clara. So were they nothing? Were they just part of his fantasy?
Well, I think they were. It's a good question. It's a good question. because if you come at it, there's obviously a bit of a debt, I think, to Inception here, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's better and more consistent in many ways, because I have a problem with the way time is handled in different layers in Inception. But also, I think what you're getting at is that there has to be a kind of collective to the number of layers down that you're in.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's entirely true, because couldn't the others have woken up, as you see it, two layers down? But if they just woke up, but the Doctor and Clara carried on dreaming,
right,
and dreamt they woke up,
right,
it's not like they've gone down through the layers in this, in an Inception kind of a way. We don't know where they started out, because we come in halfway through the story, and the kind of layers are peeled away gradually, so that we start to understand what's happening, and then obviously we keep questioning whether what we see is real, and whether they're still dreaming.
Right.
So I think I didn't question it. I thought they were real, but
well, yeah, I thought they were real too, and I must admit I really liked the Doctor going back and rescuing Clara and finding out she was an old lady about to die, and I loved that part. Then the next layer, not so much, but
well, there wasn't so much to that layer.
No, it's just it was Moffat faking us out. Yep, we have definitely seen the end of Clara. It's too late. The Doctor's, oh no, Clara's gonna go along with us. We've got her back for another year. Aren't we? Merry Christmas!
Oh, you...
I liked the part where they ended it. We're going to end it where Clara couldn't go on with the Doctor anymore because she had aged out. I really did. I thought, wow, that is a great ending for Clara.
And okay,
the next layer was not a great ending for Clara.
But it wasn't an ending for Clara, so...
I know, that's why it wasn't great.
I'm not one of these bar humbug types who are going to complain about the fact that we still have Jenna Coleman in the show, partly because that seems a very odd thing to focus on what was a pretty good Christmas episode, for all these people who have been jumping online and that's the first thing they want to start whining about.
Well, it is at the end of the show, so when you come to the end of the show, that's the last taste left in your mouth. You either want Clara to continue, or you think Clara's just really burned out, and I'm in the burned out camp. I think her story has been told.
I don't buy that at all. I think that you can be quite ambivalent about it, because suppose you may have thought that in the past, and you got through to the name of the Doctor, and the story of the Impossible Girl seemed to have been told, and you thought, well, you know, that's it. Probably they should end it there. But, oh, hey, Jenna Coleman's staying. And then what are they going to do with her? And then you discover that there's this whole other dimension to the character they managed to write going through what we like to call wrongly Series 8. And I think that really, that converted the character, I think. And it showed off that Jenna Coleman was even better than she was before. So, hypothetically, if you happen to have thought that in the past, then I think you might be in a situation where you're now thinking, okay, I kind of thought that Clara's story had been told, because there was a very strong character-driven arc to so-called Series 8, And that did come to an end, and it came to an end with them parting. But they did it before. So I'm, and I like Jenna Coleman, and I like what they did with the character in the last series. So I'm willing to hang judgment on that and see what happens.
I'll go so far as to say I like Jenna Coleman. I didn't like what they did to her in the last series. In many ways, it paralleled what I didn't like that they'd done to the Doctor. They made, a lot was made about making the Doctor considerably more obnoxious, but frankly, they made Clara far more obnoxious than the Doctor to me during the course of the series. So, yeah, by the end of it, I really want to see the back of her. And not just because it's cute.
well, so does she.
Jenna Coleman is good. She's, divorcing the actress from the part. I have no complaints. I just am afraid that they'll either do, as you point out, they'll find some other facet to her personality to go on to, which she was like two different characters from 7 to 8.
Yeah,
so
agree.
If she's yet another character, but we're going to call her Clara again, I'm not entirely on board with the notion that we just keep the same actress and just keep putting her in a different part with the same name.
I don't think it's a different part. I think there was almost nothing to her in so-called Series 7, and that changed. We kind of got to see a much fuller, more developed character, and that really hadn't been there before. I think if they completely changed that, if they went away from that in a way that wasn't consistent with the journey she's been on and the experiences she's had, I would agree with you. But I don't know that's what's planned. So, that's why I'm...
Was this ending at Christmas planned all along, or was that why we had two layers? Was it...
Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, I did wonder whether we were seeing something, because obviously I saw, well, maybe not obviously, but I saw a preview of Death in Heaven, and it was different from the version that aired because it didn't have Santa in it. So I wondered when I saw this one whether the preview of the Last Christmas had been shown without the final layer ending. I haven't been online to look to see, whether any spoilers slipped out after the preview about whether Jenna Coleman was saying. I was kind of vaguely aware that people were speculating about it, but I like the surprise. So
I mean, I think I just saw today that Moffat and the BBC have come out and said, "Yep, absolutely, she signed up for all of Series 9. That's confirmed." And
I wish they wouldn't do that, though. I mean, one of the things that I appreciated about the fact that I don't go in for all the kind of discussion about is she staying, is she not staying, or whatever. I want to see it as it comes, and I like having the surprise. But I think they make that possible by refusing to answer those questions, and that was what I liked this time. They didn't say, and that meant they could be honest about it.
Well, now Moffat did. Well, and the other part of that I was going to say is that Moffat said though that he didn't know whether Jenna was staying or going. And he didn't say at what point, but she kept it to herself for a long time. So I kind of get the feeling in light of that he could have written this film two endings, one where she's gone, one where they get the second chance.
Yep.
Play it whichever way it turns out to be in the end.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it certainly would have been possible to keep the secret in that way, because obviously that final scene only involves the two actors. You could have done it on a closed set, and you could have kept the number of people you needed to know about it to an absolute minimum. I didn't see anything about Samuel Anderson appearing in this. So again, I don't go looking for the spoilers, but I wonder if they were careful about keeping that one secret.
So next year, speculation, at the end of the year, final scene, does the Doctor wake up with his crab jumping off his face again?
Well, yeah, I wondered whether they would go back, and I was scared for a moment, though I thought it unlikely. I did wonder if they might go back into Series 8 with the dream, do their own JR moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think not. I think not, because obviously this story is to a certain extent intended to be self-contained, although it obviously establishes Clara rejoining the Doctor. I think Moffat was playing with the idea of the, what were they called? I keep thinking of them
dream
as despair
crabs.
Squid, but dream crabs. That he wanted something, and again, I like the theme. He wanted something where they would have to try and spot the lies after having told each other these porkies in order to, for one another's supposed benefit.
That was interesting too, because that is so deep down into the dream layers when they tell each other. I mean, that is at the almost the deepest layer.
It is, but we don't know that they've gone down through the layers.
Right. It's not quite, because that's right before the crabs fall from the roof and they grab him on the face, I think. That's where he's, where they're first waking up and he's trying to get her angry and she smacks him and then they kick the door in and then all the creatures come down and then we're in yet another layer down.
Yes.
So you're thinking, yeah, okay, well, she would be able to tell them, but then it's like...
But as far as we know, the original crab, the reality crabs, if you want to call the reality dream crabs, have got them moments before they meet on Clara's roof, and then they're into the base seconds later, and then they have that exchange. So it could be quite early on.
Yeah. That is the problem. It's a dream. It can't make sense. Yeah. That's the part that's going to bug me. Just niggling things like that are going to come back to me forever.
What's bugging you about it? Because what does it matter?
It's just like those four people. To those four, in I think what is final layer, the last layer, I think, where we've come back to reality. I think the Doctor says the crab got him. And then use the psychic link to track down Clara, which is why she's also, although how it got from wherever he was to wherever Clara was. But so that would not tell us why there's four other dream crabs on Earth.
Yeah, the collateral damage. Yeah, I didn't like that. To me, it would have been, apart from the fact that obviously you've got the Doctor and Clara in the same dream, even though there isn't a good reason for them both to have been attacked by a dream crab.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed fine to me because you had these, apart from the Doctor and Clara, all unconnected people who were psychically joined by virtue of them all being victims of the dream crabs. Mm-hmm. But they didn't have to have any other connection, so you didn't have to explain it in any way.
Yeah, and then, but yeah, then they started.
The weak link is the connection between the Doctor and Clara.
So, and yeah, I love the fact that they did a beautiful job of foreshadowing the possibility that Clara was going to be an old lady when one of the people in the base turned out to be an old person in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd been in normal, younger, healthy in the dream. And that was...
Don't think she'd been... Had she been younger? She didn't look younger.
I thought they'd grade her up when they put her in the wheelchair some more.
Possibly. I know the Doctor commented on her age earlier on, so she wasn't dreaming a lot younger in the way that Clara...
Right, not that level, but that the reality of what you are and what you are in your dream are not the same. That was well realized, and it set you up for it when they pulled it off, and it's like, oh yeah, okay, that makes perfect sense.
I mean, I have to say, the top layer, the final layer surprised me. I thought quite a lot of it. I mean, in a way, this is perhaps setting up, but I guessed everything before it came, including Clara's age, Clara being aged up. So again, perhaps that's because of the clues that were dropped along the way.
I say when he was beginning to pull it off her face, I thought that too. So I think
you could see her hair by then.
Maybe that was it.
As he was rushing to, I was thinking, you know, I was already thinking he's going to get there, and it's going to be years after the death of Danny. I mean, I wouldn't have taken a shot at what age it was, but I was thinking, yes, a lot of time has passed here.
Hmm.
I mean, I have to agree with you on the point about it being a good exit story for Clara, and this is more the problem I have than, you know, I'm quite happy for whatever team we will see in the TARDIS next year, I'm quite happy to take that as it comes. And I've been pleasantly surprised both by new and old teams before, but and Moffat seems to hang on to his companion actors for longer, because we had Karen Gillan for 2.5 seasons. We'll now have had Jenna Coleman for 2.5 seasons, mm-hmm. at least. And he's already hanging on to them for longer, but he does seem to write them out an awful lot, given that he's really essentially only had two companions. Because we've had, I loved the God Complex exit, mm-hmm. the original exit for Amy. That was fantastic. And then we had another exit of sorts at the end of the Wedding of River Song, and mm-hmm. That was okay. But the problem is, you've then got to top that ending. Now, for Clara, we've had what I thought was a really good ending when I saw the preview. As far as I was concerned, that was it. You know, it was heartbreaking, but they lied to each other, and that was just going to keep them apart. And then, now, in Last Christmas, we had, I thought, something that capped that, without spoiling it, keeping the kind of 62-year gap, and kind of closing off the Clara story that had been left open by the lie. And I thought that worked really well as well. And it's not so much the fact we're going to have Clara back that bothers me. It's when she leaves, it's not going to be as good as the departure that she's already had.
Companion departures have always been a problematic. And in classic Doctor Who, they were pretty light, usually. I mean, you can just pick Leela's departure for an example. It's like, whoop, where that came from? Nowhere. Gone. Sarah Jane, gotta go to Gallifrey. Sorry, gone. You know, there isn't this build and final to the story. And you do have to come up with some pretty far-fetched excuse why they would suddenly not want to be traveling with the Doctor anymore. And since we've come back, we've had to strand Rose in an alternate universe, and even that can't keep her away.
Well, it should have done.
It should have done. Yes, it should have. And Martha he's
maybe not, in a way he's guilty of worse, because he's written a good ending for Rose, for example. You know, I like that companion departure. I thought that worked. And then he goes and brings her back.
But it really, it was a good departure for her. It was the only way we were ever going to get rid of her. Nobody in their right mind would ever believe that Rose would leave the Doctor unless you killed her, and he wasn't going to do that.
Yeah.
Or you permanently stranded her in an alternate universe. I totally get that, and I'm fine with it. But you kind of go like, I couldn't really see Donna ever leaving the Doctor either. You know, her life with the Doctor is so much better than her real life, that she makes a difference, she has fun, she sees things, she's important, and you got to burn her brain out before you can get rid of her. And that's just, Amy, you have to strand her in the past in a place where the Doctor can't go with his TARDIS, which can go anywhere in time and space.
Except you don't have to do that, because he wrote them out in the God Complex without doing it. I like that. I thought Martha's exit was one of the better exits, but that's partly because I kind of like, I like them to be a little bit less far-fetched.
I think Martha was fair, because she had just spent an entire year without the Doctor trying to save the world. So she is, it's not like today she shows up and, I'm going to leave. She's had a year to have a life and to do things and to make a difference and to go on. And then, sure, she meets up with the Doctor, saves the day. But it's like, you know, I've realized that I'm done. I believe it. I bought it. It was a little abrupt with like, yeah, I know we're never going to get together, so I'm leaving. But it was all right. But Dawn and Rose are a bit contrived. And then, of course, Rose keep coming back again and again. Amy, right, she's gone. It was a good ending with the God Complex, but the fact that the Doctor can drop in on your house every Wednesday with absolute precision kind of eliminates this traveling with the Doctor thing. He could show up 10 years later. Hey, want to go on another trip? Yeah, okay, fine. It's problematic.
But you, I don't see a problem with leaving these things open. It's the fact that, you know, somehow the character has to be written out completely. I don't know that, that's true. If it is, then, you know, I think this departure for Clara, the old Clara, okay, that's, you know, that's a nice way of doing it. That worked.
But another thing that they haven't done very much in Doctor Who, Tegan being the only example I can think of, is the companion leaving basically in a fed up huff. And that didn't work well at all, because it really, again, just sort of came out of nowhere.
Yeah,
I genuinely think Moffat has done had they left it with the old lady, but how they did it, this is the first chance they've really had to have the Doctor and the companion, through a story where they are both a little bit sympathetic, come to a position where they can't stay together and leave. And that's felt more real than most of the companion departures. And then you tack the Christmas special on top of it to give them the opportunity to reconcile and still be friends. Because the audience doesn't want a companion to leave, a beloved companion, because some people love her, on bad terms. You know, that leaves a bad taste in the mouth. And it's just not, you know, the happy kind of fun kids
it's
adventure
not bad,
show.
It's just sad.
Yeah. And so he managed to have it and have his cake too in this. So that's very good for Moffat. It's a very well pieced together bit of convoluted logic. I applaud his cleverness. That's probably what I get out of this episode more than anything else, is it's clever. He gets to have the kind of break up with the Doctor and Clara, and at the same time he also gets to have the friendly reunion, or even if she didn't continue on, then the, you know, I've forgiven you, Doctor, I'm sorry, at age 62. Or actually, she'd be more like 82, because he said it was 62 years. So, yeah, it was good. It was good. I can't complain. There wasn't actually a whole lot that happened in it. It was a very talky episode. Did you notice
it was. Yes, I did. And it really felt like it was a 12th Doctor episode, in a way that obviously there was a little bit of action.
So very good tension when the creature was crawling all over the table and on top of Clara. That was good.
Yes. But essentially, it was a bunch of people stuck in a base, and the Doctor being very, very clever. And that feels like the way the 12th Doctor behaves. And in a way, I can't really imagine that working with Matt Smith playing. But somehow his Doctor, and probably Tennant's Doctor as well, are much more kind of action oriented. Whereas the whole big idea of it seemed to me to suit in some way the 12th Doctor and the new tone and style of the show that we've had since the 12th Doctor has arrived.
And we are in 12th Doctor end of series 8, I think, as opposed to somewhere in between. He did come off that way to me. He has grown since his regeneration. If I recall correctly, it's Mummy on the Orient Express where I really first felt the Doctor had kind of clicked into his own. And that was, you know, at the moment when he gets the girl up there and you think he's using her as bait in a trap, and then he steps in and takes the bullet, as it were. Yeah. He does the same thing in this episode, in a way. I mean, he sacrifices himself. Got to rescue Clara, go stick one of these brain parasites on me. It is the heroics of the Doctor showing through. That balance works for me. He can be curmudgeon-y, he can be rude, but he has to be heroic as well.
Yes. And he's willing to hold Clara's hand, which I liked.
Oh, you know, I think my son, I think, is we're currently been going through the ninth, and we're in the 10th Doctor range. We're still in Rose. And although I'm kidding my son about it, I think there's something he appreciates about the 12th Doctor, and that's that he's not huggy.
Yeah.
He gets all squirmy every time somebody hugs the Doctor in the earlier ones, and, you know, the typical, ew, kind of thing. But
But there's a very, very slight softening of it in the sense that he's willing to hold Clara's hand. Not anyone else's hand, but Clara's hand.
Right, right. Which is fine. Which is fine. He's still, you can still see it even when Clara hugs him. He's still, he does that brilliant sort of, yeah, I'm tolerating this, but okay.
Yeah.
Look, so, yeah. All right, so how was Santa Claus?
Well, I mean, I liked Nick Frost's performance in it. I thought that was very good. I thought having Santa Claus in it was very clever. But I think, I mean, this was something you alluded to before when you were talking about Christmas episode. You say, you know, reality-based shows. This is not a reality-based show. Reality-based shows have these kind of Christmas miracles in or whatever. I think Moffat is an incredibly clever writer, and it's this kind of self-awareness that bleeds through when he does things like this, because all the forums were alight with people whining, going, you know, but I'm not endorsing this view in case there are any of a different persuasion here, but they were saying, Santa's not real. Santa's not real. So how can this be? It would be terrible if Santa's real. Well, hello, the Doctor isn't real. The Doctor is a fiction.
But there is. I mean, I endorse that position. Santa's not real. It shouldn't be in the show. But I will give him this. That was a very, very clever way to do it. I'll go back to shows like Image of the Fendahl. Or I can't think of the name, it was a Matt Smith and Ghosts and whatnot. Doctor Who has always, in the past, taken things that are not real, fantasy, ghosts, magic, and they've stuffed a bunch of techno babble around them to make them, reality based is the wrong word, but in other words, they're trying to ground them in the fact that these things aren't real. So Santa Claus had to be, they had to do that. Santa's a really hard one. I can see, you know, ghosts, you're seeing a temporal shift from another time zone. Well, okay. Yeah, all right. Fine. It's a show about time travel. So therefore, obviously, there is some way to see through, as opposed to it just being the spirit of a dead person. So they have avoided things like spirits, souls. Yes. That's the kind of supernatural area that they have avoided, and Santa Claus falls totally in that.
I don't think Doctor Who has, realistically, I don't think Doctor Who has avoided souls, because there's all sorts of kind of life essence-y stuff or whatever that is completely non-physical. Even if you think about things like the Gelf or whatever, yeah, you can come up with some kind of techno-babble mumbo-jumbo to explain it, but the bottom line is you're still talking about the same things, and even if your ghosts are explained by some kind of, you know, shift in time or whatever. At the minute, I can only think of an example from Torchwood. But the point is that what you're talking about in terms of ghosts, it's a personification of someone who is dead. So fundamentally, all right, you come at it in a different way in order to try and avoid magic or whatever.
Well, okay, wait a minute. So we'll just make the ghost case. If I die and my ghost comes back, that is my whatever post-death. If it is a time shift, it is an echo of a time when I was alive. It's a very subtle difference. It means that the body did not continue on, or that the whatever did not continue on after death. You are seeing something that is from pre-death. I mean, that's really the...
But it's a philosophical difference, and it doesn't necessarily change what you see and what you experience. It's more the kind of question that philosophers of the mind would ask in order to try and distinguish ways in thinking about identity or whatever. But that you don't actually need to answer within the story in order to have a certain phenomenon presented.
I think
that's what Doctor Who does. Doctor Who comes up with some kind of sciencey veneer or whatever, and it treads a fine line, and that's why. But it is trying to tread a line. It is trying to tread a line, and I think possibly that's why a lot of people were.
I think Santa's
not that keen on Robin Hood, and I think they may have got away with it that time, and then everyone was like, "Oh no, Santa!" Up in arms. And as you say, within the story, it's handled very well. But what is fantastic about it, what is so brilliant, and what is, you know, it's self-consciously clever writing, but no one does it like Moffat. He's so good at this. He pokes at the audience in having reacted in that way. I mean, he must have anticipated the reaction, because he can't have had time to respond to anything that was said online or whatever.
Right.
But he has the Doctor, you know, doing this thing about how Santa isn't real or whatever. And of course, everyone turns around and, you know, he's a time traveller in a police box.
Mm-hmm.
And the Doctor says something like, "But well, sometimes it's very difficult to draw the line between fantasy and reality." But of course, he's not drawing a line between fantasy and reality at all. He's drawing a line between fantasy and fantasy. And you can ignore that and you can stay entirely within the story. But I think he's definitely giving the audience a poke, you know, saying, hang on a minute, if you alienate yourselves from this for just a second, what you're actually, it's almost like if you wake up, you the audience, you've got the TV on, that's your dream crab, that's taking you into this layer of where the Doctor is real, and then a layer down, you've got where Santa is real within the Doctor is real universe. During the story, okay, the Doctor's going to wake up and he's going to go back to a reality where Santa isn't real. But at the end of the episode, we're all going to wake up and the Doctor isn't real anymore either.
Well, I think, yeah, obviously Moffat was having some fun there. I mean, there's the,
yeah.
When the Doctor says, "We just get in the TARDIS," and say, "Oh yeah, we're all going to fit in the police." It's bigger on there. No, it's an alien. Yeah, he's clearly doing this, but I'll tell you what, I would bet money that Moffat, the fan that he is, if the next showrunner comes along and just out and out threw away some of those conventions that Doctor Who has held on to, like we're going to have to explain ghosts away as some sort of techno babble, or he wouldn't like that. I don't think he would. He writes these things in a way that says you and I are in on the joke.
Yes.
But nonetheless, the joke is necessary. And
yes.
And
yes.
So
I mean, it's a genuinely multi-layered thing.
He's got to be able to still put the technobabble around the fantasy in some way, shape, or form. And so I will admit, when they saw Santa Claus in the end of the episode, I was in the same opinion. It's like, how the heck are you going to do that and not screw up? Although, that reminds me. So the Doctor is, he's left Clara behind. They've lied to each other. He gets in the TARDIS. He flies off. We don't know exactly how long it is, but it kind of feels like it's not too terribly long. And then...
Well, dream time.
Dream time. Santa Claus shows up. Okay? So we can assume, I think, that the end, not necessarily the cafe scene, but the last sequence in... Death in Heaven, we can assume that the last sequence that we saw was part of the dream.
Mm-hmm.
When the Doctor wakes up with the dream crab in his face at the end of this episode, he looks all the world to me like he's back on that lava planet where Clara threw away his keys.
Yes, I think that when I mentioned that I had wondered for a minute whether they were going to go back into the season 8 story and say that part of that was a dream, I think that was probably the moment.
It might still be. I mean, that whole last sequence might be non-existent. Danny Pink might never have existed, or his death might never have happened.
His death might never have happened. That's true.
And yeah, so it yeah. I just hope that next season we don't have the Master in control of dream crabs, because that's just going to be too much.
That'd be good.
What else have we got? I don't have anything. I mean, this is a very light story. It's really kind of about the reconciliation. I thought it was. So if this is the shared gestaltish dream thing, how did Danny get so wise there at the end? Was that Clara? Was that Clara's mind projecting what Danny would do to sacrifice himself for her?
I think so. I think the reference to the doctor saying that he'd made her tall, that she'd made him taller, was probably intended as an indication that was what she was doing. But I thought it was again another lovely performance from Samuel Anderson, and I thought it was a nice way to kind of bring him back and see the character kind of un-cybernized for one last time. And I don't know whether Moffat's going to take some stick from other fans who have been clamoring for real deaths. You know, this was one of the things that people were asking him at the preview. You know, how come it's taken so long for you to do a real death? And he said he acknowledged the fact that lots of the kind of deaths that you'd seen on screen in the past were kind of not proper, in inverted comma, deaths, right way back from, you know, when River Song first appeared and he rescues her.
Mm-hmm.
And so clearly, again, they may feel that he's guilty of not, you know, Danny's not dead again. He's back in another episode because obviously we had all those times that Rory died. For me, I thought it was, I don't think it took anything away because clearly
he's still dead.
The thing that matters is the loss, the grief that Clara feels, and that's kind of counterpointed by the dream that she chooses to have, and as a kind of valedictory appearance for Danny, I thought it was just a really beautifully played scene.
The one thing, you know, being that it's Clara, and or it's Clara's imagination creating Danny, and she obviously believes that he would try everything he can to protect her, therefore he himself would tell her to get out of the dream. The one line that I thought was interesting, if we're saying it's coming from Clara's mind, is the doctor says, you know, you saved the whole world, and he says, no, I saved Clara, you lot just got in the way, or collateral saving, or something of that nature.
Yeah. You just got lucky.
That was inflated sense of self-importance on Clara's
part.
We
know
there.
That Clara's got an ego. We know she's got an ego.
Yes, she does. So
it didn't seem out of character for Danny.
No, it didn't seem out of character for Danny.
Me.
No, it didn't.
But I agree.
Although it doesn't fit
in
with
order,
his line at the end.
In order for that to be something that you remember, or that you the way that you see yourself or see yourself being seen, then yes, you've got to have an ego. We know Clara does.
True. Very much so. Well, any final thoughts on this year's Christmas special? How many times have you watched it?
Well, I've only seen it the once. I've only seen it the once. But I want to watch A Christmas Carol again, so I can't go, you know, rewatching this one all the time.
All right. Anyway, so anything else?
Let me just, only one thing. Because I think I've covered everything else that I wanted to discuss about it, but I did spot something. Oh, maybe one minor thing, as well, which was we haven't really mentioned the other characters who I thought were fairly generic characters.
Mm-hmm.
Although I quite liked Shona.
That's Dancing Girl.
That's the dancing girl, and I quite liked the way in which the characters didn't seem to fit with the situation, and at first you couldn't quite figure out what that was. Was it the writer doing something that was deliberately quirky? But then that didn't quite work, and it's not until you kind of get the reveal that you kind of see it, and I think again that indicates just how clever Moffat can be, because he's saying, look, this is what I'm doing, and he's saying here's dream logic in a story. You know, Doctor Who, with the writing, it's always doing, it's taking shortcuts, chopping through things that would be illogical in order to try and create this internal universe where these things make sense. That's what it always does.
You brought something to my mind with that character, Shona.
Shona.
When she pops out of her dream, assuming that she did pop out of her dream, mm-hmm. and all the people who saw that crab thing breaking up on the ground next to them, they were remarkably calm. I would be about a mile and a quarter away from that location, if I saw that thing, even if it dissolved into dust next to me, that would scream. But her list, did you get a chance to read the list?
Yep.
And we had Thing from Another World, which, of course, is an Arctic alien base. We had Aliens, which is the face huggers and the whatnot. What was the last thing on her list?
Forgive Dave.
Was it Dave? Okay. I can't remember what the name was. But if that had been Dan.
No, it wasn't. It was Dave. And but,
And I want to point out one other thing that I thought was terribly, terribly clever. And this is Moffat at clever. Doctor picks up Clara on the rooftop. Doctor TARDIS materializes at the base. And at some point later in the story, the Doctor says, "You don't remember traveling between in the TARDIS, do you?" Something to that effect. And she goes, "Yeah." And he says, "Yeah, dream logic. It doesn't have to make sense." It's like, that's TV logic.
Exactly, exactly. And that's my point. The only other show that has done anything even comparable to this, I think, is there's an episode of House.
The one where he's nasty, yeah.
First three series. It's amazingly written, but you have to be, you know, you really, it's a terribly ambitious thing to do this and sort of say, "I'm doing this. This is dream logic," because as you say, it's TV logic and you do it all the time. So to do it in such a way that actually makes sense within the story and doesn't look like the normal shortcuts and yet seems to be seamless. It's got to work in both ways. It's got to work so that when you first see it, you think it's TV logic, but it doesn't quite work. So that when you explain that it's dream logic, you kind of go, "Ah, yes, okay." And you know, it's all about the kind of sequencing and of the scenes and the pacing and everything. And he just does it really, really cleverly in this. And it shouldn't look clever, and it almost doesn't. But I think it is clever writing.
And you had one other thing. I'm sorry, I interrupted that.
Oh yeah, well, the one other thing, which the thing that got me onto the other characters and thinking about all of this was as you call Shona, dancing girl, was the fact that Moffat appears to have readopted the Russell T Davies tradition in the Christmas specials of having Slade.
Oh, the music, is that who that was?
You remember that did he do it in the next Doctor?
I don't remember any music in the
How
next
could he have
Doctor.
Done it in the next Doctor, because that was set in Victorian time?
I don't remember it from that one.
Certainly, anyway, the first few, he always managed to stick. I bet he did get it into the last Doctor, because it always had Slade in it. And then, notably, when we got the Christmas Carol, it was, you know, I was going to say Victorian. Of course, it wasn't. It was Alien, but it had Catherine Jenkins and a wonderful musical score. All the more wonderful for not having Slade in it.
the weakest part of the old Christmas specials is that singing. Don't like those interludes at all in them.
But I did think, because he manages to stick quite a long sequence of the song playing in it, and yet it works in story because there's a reason for it, and also it's brilliant. It's very funny. It's a really nice sequence, I thought.
I really thought she was going to bump into one of the things, because she was getting
a
little bit too
energetic, too
exhausted.
She was giving it everything. Yeah, yeah. It was brilliant.
So, all right. Well, I'm gonna leave it with one last word for me, and that was, and we've said it again and again and again, and there is just one word for this. The way this story was written, clever. I can't pay it any other better compliment. There are issues, but it's clever. And
yeah, it's vintage. It's vintage Moffat. You kind of see the things that he is reputed for in this. He is a very, very clever writer, and he uses it. So you notice it.
And because he didn't use time travel, it worked a lot better. Anyway, it was dreamy weamy, not timey wimey. Okay, well, Simon, again, I wish you happy holidays, and thank you for taking your time out here on Boxing Day to talk about this episode.
It's a pleasure.
And listeners, we hope you're also having a great holiday season, and we hope you'll join us all again next time on Fusion Patrol.
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us? Leave us a review on iTunes. Or stop by and visit at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Search for Fusion Patrol. Or just drop us a note at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf.